Hi, I'm Norm Shealy. NormShealy.com. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Greg Rollins, who is an accountant. It's a different show for my show tonight, but we're going to talk about income taxes and what we can do to maybe get a little bit of our taxes back this year and do a little bit better for ourselves. How are you, Greg?
I'm doing fine, Eva. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. Before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and your service and where people can find you?
All right. Well, the name of the website and the company is CitizenTax.com, and we're an online e-filer that you can do your federal and state returns. We're also, you can find us on IRS.gov. But the easiest way to find us is at www.citizentax.com.
So what exactly do you do there?
Well, what we've created is an online web portal for individuals to create, prepare, and submit their own taxes to the IRS and to their individual states. As you may know, that e-filing is growing about 4 or 5% a year, but online self-prepared e-filing with software such as ours is growing about 20% a year. So as people become more and more adept and comfortable with shopping online, with doing business online, banking online, they also become more comfortable with doing their taxes online as well.
Well, I have to tell my listeners that I don't know beans about taxes. I mean, nothing. And so last year I went to the IRS website and they had about, I don't know, 20 or 30 different approved sites to use, and I found yours and I did my taxes. I had a problem. It got rejected for some reason and I left a message, and not only did my problem get resolved, but you called me personally, and it's your site, and you fixed it without giving me any problem. And, you know, what more can somebody ask for than customer service like that? So
we appreciate it, and we certainly value customers. And we understand that tax season is not only a confusing time, but it's a frustrating time. And people want their taxes done. They want them to be done quickly. Them done accurately, and they want to forget about it for next year.
It was easy for me. I mean, all I had to do was have, you know, a few pieces of paper, my W-2 and whatever incomes that I had. And I just want you to know it was a good service, and I value it, and I'll be going back there again this year. So let's get started with the questions. And my first question is, and I think we talked a little bit about this before the show, so if you don't know the answer to something I ask you, because remember you're talking to somebody who knows nothing that just wants to know a little bit more, then just tell me you don't know. That's okay, and we'll move on to the next question. So the first thing I want to talk about is alternative energy and any tax credits that we might get. And what do you see on tax returns that you know that people are doing that makes it cost effective for them, if anything?
Well, the in this large Reconciliation Act, there were some tax credits in there for instance, residential energy efficient property credit.
Now, tell us what that means. I remember you're talking to somebody who doesn't know anything.
Well, pretty much if you want to, I think they call it the caulk credit. Essentially, you know, if you tighten up your home where the heat stays in and the cold stays in, and your energy bills are lower, you put in energy efficient windows, things of that nature. There's even a credit if you change to natural gas or propane, and you get about 30% up to the maximum credit of $1,500.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, what if you put in a new heating and air system that is a lot more efficient than the one that you have. Do you get any benefit from that?
That's this credit. It's basically for homes, for people that want to upgrade their homes, and the government trying to, you know, encourage us all to be a little more green. They basically foot the bill for 30% of the cost up to $1,500.
Okay, so I'm going to use me for an example. I put in a new heating and air system, and it cost me, I think, about $6,700. So how do I get a credit for that? Do I need a receipt, or do I just put in, what do I do to get a credit for that, or do I?
Well, in our program, and really in e-filing in general, you don't need receipts. You should obviously have your W-2s, your 1099s, your $6,700 for your upgraded heating and air system that you put in.
Uh-huh.
But you essentially just fill in the blanks. And
do I have to itemize, or because I don't think last year I itemized. Will that make me have to itemize?
No, this is a separate form. It's called Residential Energy Credits, and there's about 10 questions you answer, and you fill the blanks in, and we figure the credit for you. And it, you know, if at any point the IRS decides they want to make sure that you actually did put a heating air in,
mm-hmm.
at that point we'll mail you a letter, and they'll want a copy of that receipt. But
okay.
It's not required for e-filing.
Okay, so from that $6,700 that I spend, I'll get how much back?
Well, if you've got $6,700, 30% of that is $2,010, but they're going to limit you to $1,500.
Okay, so I'll get $1,500 cash back for that.
You get a credit against your taxes.
Oh, that's amazing. That's fabulous. Okay.
Okay.
All right, so what about cars? Buy new cars. Do you have to buy a new car to get some kind of tax credit, or can you get an old one that's better than the one you have, or a used one that's better than the one you have? How does that work?
Well, honestly, I'm not that familiar with the automobile side.
Okay.
Although I know that they went through this cash for clunkers to where you can, if you purchased a new car, you can use what's called the Schedule L. And I know this is going to be a little more. Just bear with me for a minute, and I'll try to explain it. You said that last year you didn't itemize, so you took the standard deduction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This year they have a couple of other things. You can itemize, which means that you can claim your charitable contributions, any medical bills over a certain percentage, your home interest that you paid to the bank or your mortgage company. But if your standard deduction is greater than your itemized deduction, obviously we give you credit for the greater of. But there's a new form called the Schedule L, as in Larry, and this essentially allows you not to itemize, but you can actually bump up the amount that you can deduct off your taxes. In other words, just say that you're single, you'll get $5,700 as a normal standard deduction, but if you want to add if you own a home, you have real estate taxes of a couple thousand dollars, mm-hmm. those can be added up to $1,000 or $500.
So Schedule L would be for what?
Buying a new car.
Oh, just cars?
Yeah, right. Vehicles. You can also use them for adding your real estate taxes on your home. All it does essentially is it kind of bumps up your standard deduction, which reduces your taxable income.
Oh, okay, that's a good thing then.
It's either that or the itemized deductions. Obviously, you can't have both. You have to choose the one that's the larger amount for you.
Okay, now let's talk about medical bills. Is that, you said something about a percentage. Is that a we'll just talk about that. Tell us about that.
If you have a, you know, I tell you, medical bills are really high, obviously, and it doesn't take much to run a pretty big bill up. So to kind of, you know, knock down the cost a bit, the government will allow you a deduction you take your total medical and dental bills for the year, and then you take your adjusted gross income in your return,
mm-hmm.
okay? And then you multiply that amount times 7.5%, and so anything over, just say, for instance, adjusted gross income was $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
7.5% of that is $1,875. So if you had $5,000 in medical bills, you would actually be able to itemize the $3,125, which is the $5,000 less the $1,875. Basically, anything over 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, you'll be able to add to your itemized return.
Now, do we have to figure all this out on your tax service, or do you have something where we enter an amount, and you say, oh, this is not enough, so you can't claim it, or this works?
Well, we can't do that, because if we did that, you know, people might say, well, maybe I can fudge my number a little bit. You know, what we do is we provide the program, and all you do is you plug in the amount of your medical and dental expenses,
mm-hmm.
and we calculate it automatically for you.
Okay.
And add it to your return if it's applicable. If it's under that amount, obviously nothing will calculate in.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. So we just put the numbers in, and it computes it for us.
You just plug the numbers in, and we do everything else.
And how much do you charge for this service?
We charge $1,776 for a federal return. That's a good American number. And we charge $1,888 for state return.
Okay. I thought it was something really reasonable like that. It was good. That's all I know.
I appreciate it. If you do them together, we'll charge you $3,333.
Okay. Tell me the least known tax breaks that you know exist that some of us should be aware of.
Well, you know, I think the least known, because it's the newest, is called the Schedule M, as in Mary. The Schedule M really is a, if you have a job, you're gonna get a credit against your taxes. It's called the Making Work Pay, and Government Retiree Credits. Essentially, if you have a W-2 or 1099, we calculate it in there, for you automatically. If you're single, you'll get a $400 credit. If you're filing, jointly, you'll get an $800 credit.
What if you're head of household? Does that matter?
Yes, you'll get the $400 credit.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead.
Just for a second, let's talk about what the difference of a credit and a deduction is.
Okay.
Now, a deduction, just say you had $10,000 in deductions and you had a $50,000 income. Well, the $10,000 reduced from the $50,000, that'll make your taxable income at $40,000. Okay?
Okay?
A credit usually is better, because a credit, just say at the end of your return, you owe $1,000. A credit actually will reduce that tax bill. So instead of reducing your income, it reduces the taxes that you actually owe.
Oh, that's a good thing to know.
In many cases, not only will it reduce your tax bill, it will actually allow you to get a refund.
Okay, let me ask you this. If I have a cafeteria plan at work where I have them take out, you know, monies, pre-tax monies to pay for my daycare or pay for some medical expenses, is there a place on the form for that? Is there any use for that, or is that already done by me not getting taxed on it?
Well, right.
That makes sense.
You bet. What they're allowing you to do is to take money out of your check before taxes to put into a 401k or some type of retirement plan.
Or those things. I have one where I put money in there and then I pay my daycare bill and send them a receipt and they send me that amount.
Right. It's just it's a savings plan. It's allowing you to pull money out of your off your income before taxes. And if you don't spend it all, you lose it.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
So, but what you'll do is they'll take the money. Just say you made $50,000 and you put $5,000 into one of these retirement plans. You're going to be taxed on $45,000.
Uh-huh.
All right? So the $5,000 you put in your 401k, your cafeteria plan, you know, when you take the money out of that plan, that's when they tax you.
Okay, so are they taxed when I take that $120 out and pay my daycare with it? Am I taxed on that?
If it's the type of plan you're talking about.
It's the cafeteria plan, whatever
right.
you know what that
you want is. The tax on that now. But now understand, if you pulled out, if you said that it's going to be $1,000 that you had carved out of your income for daycare,
uh-huh.
and you spent $600 during the year,
uh-huh.
you're going to lose that extra $400.
Right. I understand
okay.
that. Right. But can I claim daycare on my taxes then? Or not?
You can put daycare on your taxes, sure, as long as you pay for it with money that's been taxed.
Okay, because this is pre-tax
okay.
money.
That's right. You can't get the deduction and also claim it.
Okay.
But if you actually have a daycare bill, there's a form, and I know they have all these number forms. They get confusing, but it's basically the child and dependent care expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And the government will subsidize you if you're a single mom, or if you're married and both parents work, they'll end up subsidizing anywhere between 20% and 27% of the amount you pay. They'll give you a credit back against your income.
So, what form do I have to fill out for that?
It's called the Form 2441. But the name of it is the Child and Dependent Care Expenses Form.
Okay.
Okay?
It's great to be able to have somebody to ask all these questions. Now, let me ask you this. I'm real big personally, and most of my listeners, in alternative medicine. And obviously, our insurance doesn't cover that. And when I say alternative medicine, I mean like supplements and preventive things, nutrition kind of things. Is there any way to put that on our taxes in any way? Like, I probably spend several thousand dollars a year on supplements. And they're in my medical records, and my doctor has said, written in my records, yes, take these things. So even though it's not a prescription, she said take these things. So is there any way to get that on my taxes and get money back or credit or anything?
You know, that would really be a gray area, and honestly, I'm not versed enough to know. I think that would be anything a doctor would write a prescription for.
Not a prescription, though.
Just,
I mean,
just
I don't take it. I don't take it to the pharmaceutical and get it filled. She may give me a prescription slip and say, take these things. But it's not something that I take to a pharmacy. It's something I go to the health food store and buy.
Now, I could be wrong, but to my knowledge, I don't know of anything that would allow you to claim any of those preventive medicine things.
Okay, that's a shame.
Okay.
That's a shame.
It kind of goes back to the medical and dental expenses that on the itemized deduction page. I think that those are all actual things by medical doctors. And
well, she's a medical doctor. She's an MD. So, do you think I could? How would I know? Put it in and see if somebody says something. Is that how you know?
Well, no, typically what you have to do is you actually get a bill from the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And what you pay the doctor, that is what you can add to as an expense.
Okay.
But if you go to a store and purchase something on the recommendation, that's not expensible.
Okay. So if I buy, because I actually buy them from her. She has her own little thing. So if I buy them from this physician's office, I can do it?
You know, I don't think so.
Okay.
No, as I said, not going to be an expert in this. I think it actually has to be for, medical procedure or something that's been prescribed.
Okay.
But,
all right.
But I'm not going to say I'm the expert on that.
Okay. So now my next question is, if someone has, say, let's just use where I live because as an example. Let's say somebody lives in Georgia, but they have a home in Tennessee. That's like a second home, and Tennessee is a no state tax. They have no state income tax.
Right, they have a sales tax. Right.
Yeah, could you claim that was your residence if you have property and a house up there so that you don't have to pay taxes?
Well, the IRS actually allows you a primary home and a secondary home.
Uh-huh.
And you can actually claim the interest on both and the real estate taxes on both.
Uh-huh.
It's really irrelevant where you live in the United States. Now, obviously, there's considerations on the state side as to what you what you'd be paying. As far as what the IRS says, you can actually claim two homes. Some are a first home and a second home, maybe a primary and a vacation home, but they start drawing the line after two.
Well, what if what about with the state tax? I mean, if you were working in Georgia but living in Tennessee, which would you have to? But you had a residence in Georgia. Could you elect to use Tennessee as your primary residence, even though you're working in Georgia?
Right. Pretty much the rule is wherever you live for 6 months in a day, that can be your primary.
Is that the state rule? What if the state says all you got to do is to have residences to own your property and pay, you know, pay your utility bills and have your car registered there? Would that same rule apply?
I couldn't answer that. I do know that as far as the taxes, you'd end up needing to do a part year return for one state and a part year return for the other state.
Okay. What do employers think about that? Or do you know?
In what way?
I don't know. I mean, saying that you live in Tennessee or in wherever, Nevada, or any of those states that has no state taxes, what would do employers have any reason to not want somebody to do that?
Employers? No. You know, I mean, a lot of businesses move to, you know, Texas and Florida in particular don't have income tax. Nevada doesn't have an income tax. Alaska doesn't have an income tax. I believe Wyoming doesn't have an income tax. And obviously there's advantages for people living there because they have to pay their federal taxes but not any state taxes. And I'm sure they derive revenue by some other way.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do it by an income tax like you have in Georgia.
What are some things that you think of, some tax incentives that you need to be considering? If you're an average person, I'm not talking about, let's say somebody $50,000 or between $50,000 and $150,000, what are some tax incentives when you're thinking about retiring and what state to reside in?
Well, you know, my previous life, I actually was a stockbroker and a financial advisor, but I'm not one now, so I'm not going to give financial advice, but pretty much what you can do is depending on the person's situation, okay? You know, do they own their own home? Do they have, are they supporting any children? How large is their pension? And these days, you know, not only do you have a pension, but who is it from? You know?
And what difference would that make?
Well, if your pension is being funded from an insurance company that, you know, is on shaky ground, your pension's in jeopardy.
Oh,
you know, if you're a state employee, and your state's, you know, having financial difficulties, they may want to pay you in an IOU and not cash.
I see. What about, states that have to do with, like Tennessee, I know they don't have state income taxes, but you do pay on your dividends and things. What considerations would you think of there?
Well, it'd be really pretty easy.
I hope this makes sense because I don't really know what I'm talking about. I just heard somebody talking about it.
It's whatever state you're in, you obviously need to check out the tax structure and how they collect fees because every state, you know, has a revenue stream. Most use income taxes, some use sales taxes, some, you know, have a, like a tag fee for your vehicle that's, you know, several hundred dollars. So by one way or the other, they're going to collect some revenue from you. And, it's really fairly easy. Every state has a website, and you can go there and actually see what the state tax rates are. And you can kind of figure out, you know, what's the, is it different for you? In other words, I know a lot of people that are looking to retire, they want to get a residence in Texas because they know that their pension fund, their CD income, their dividend income is going to go further if they don't have to pay any state tax.
Okay. I hope I understand that. One more question. People like that live in, say, Canada, and they come down, they live in Canada, you know, in the
in the spring or the summer, and then they move down to Florida for, you know, while it's warm. Where do they pay taxes, or do they pay taxes? How does that work?
You know, honestly, we don't support returns for foreign nationals. However, we do a lot of returns for soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm very proud of that. We've done returns for missionaries around the world. We've done returns from embassies around the world that have gotten online in Shanghai and Singapore and Peru and Baghdad and logged onto our website and done their taxes with us.
Well, that's an, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's kind of heartwarming when you see a customer service ticket comes in and they may direct it to me, and I always try to give the, you know, soldiers, you know, good customer service, and we certainly appreciate their service to our country, and I'm honored that they actually use our program to do their taxes.
Well, that brings up another question I didn't even think about before. My son's in the military, and he just came back from Iraq, and he's in Colorado, and he's young, and he doesn't know anything about. He filed his first tax return last year, I think. What are some things that he would need to know?
The military.
His state of domicile would be Georgia, but he's in Colorado. So, what are some things he would need to know?
Well, let's just talk about the easy thing on the federal side. The military is going to give him a W-2, okay? And in that W-2, just like you get and I get, most people that have jobs get, he's going to have something different in there if he was actually in a combat zone. He's going to get combat pay.
Mm-hmm.
And that combat pay actually can be used to either increase, to give him a slightly greater benefit on earned income credit if he qualifies for that.
He does see that.
Right.
He
and
was
so,
in combat. So I'm going to make a note.
So in our program, all he needs to do is to fill in the W-2 exactly as it is in front of him, because mm-hmm. our W-2 program looks identical to the one he'll get in the mail. He fills the blanks in, and then we calculate it, add it into these earned income credit. Now, just to kind of give every one of your listeners kind of a ballpark of what earned income credit is, somewhere between, you know, $3,000 and $30,000, anywhere between zero and three children, the government is going to help subsidize your income if you're in that low income range. And they do that by giving you a refundable credit called the Earned Income Tax Credit. And again, we calculate it for you automatically. You just fill the blanks in, and then at the end of the program, you'll see that you've got, you know, $1,500 or $2,000, really up to $5,500 the government will calculate in. But going back to the combat pay, we calculate that for him, and what the IRS allows soldiers to do is sometime combat pay would throw them out of the earned income credit or give them a lower amount.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes adding it in will give them a greater amount. And so what we're allowed to do is to calculate it both ways and to make sure that they have the largest benefit.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Either you take it in or you put it in or you take it out. Either way, they're going to get the largest benefit.
Okay. So, could you talk a little bit about the tax credit for existing homeowners? I thought in 2009 there was some kind of new tax credit.
There's actually two. It's called the First Time Home Buyer's Credit. And you get, you know, anyone that's ever bought a home, you know, you go to closing, and then, you know, hopefully you've been approved for a loan, and your bank writes a check for however much it is. But on a first-time home buyer, you get $8,000. And that essentially comes off your down payments, the money that you don't have to come up with. The government's going to front that. But this year, they've got a new one, and it's for existing homeowners. In other words, if you were already a current homeowner and wanted to buy a different home, theoretically, you know, move up and buy a slightly larger home, you can get a $6,500 credit. Now, on this credit, you actually have to have made an offer and an acceptance, I believe, by April 30th of this year, and you have to close by July 30th of this year. And if you do that,
Sorry, go ahead.
You get either $6,500 or $8,000 that can lower your down payment depending on your, you know, your personal situation.
Now, does that count if you're getting, like, a second home in another state like we were talking about earlier?
I don't believe that there's that distinction. Pretty much, if you're buying a home, you can get up to $6,500. If you have a contract by April 30th and you close on it by July 30th, I believe those are the dates.
Do you have to get a loan? Or what if you just pay cash? Or what if you have one of those deals where owner finances?
I don't think it matters. I think that as long as you actually make the purchase and you actually have an escrow company doing the closing for you, you can get the credit. But
okay.
You actually have to claim that credit. Right?
You have to get an escrow company. You can't just pay, right? Why does it matter if you get an escrow company?
I think the IRS wants documentation. That would be
my guess. But if you could send them the contract, would that work?
As far as I know, that would work. As far as I know, there's not any distinction, you know, of how you have to do it. They're wanting to, the government's wanting to encouraging people to, you know, make home purchases.
Okay. What about personal exemptions? You may have talked about that some, but since I'm an idiot about this, I may not have got it, so.
It does get kind of confusing. We actually, every taxpayer, we either get a deduction, which is either your standard deduction, the Schedule L I talked to about before, or itemized deductions. All those are kind of the same thing. But each of us also get an exemption in addition to that. So let's just say, for instance, in your case, just say that you had a household and you have one child. That would be $3,650 each, or a total of $7,000 $7,300 that will be used to reduce your income. It moves you down to, you know, your taxable income has been reduced. And as long as that person is not being claimed in another return, everyone in your tax return gets $3,650. That's a primary, that's a spouse, and as many dependents as you have.
What about people who have, say, relatives or friends that live with them, say a student even, who, you know, doesn't make any money, they're just going to school, or either they're kind of getting their Social Security or whatever, you know, a grandparent or a sibling or something that lives in your house. Can you claim that person?
Right. You're talking about if you have a student live with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or
right.
A relative or whatever.
You bet. I mean, it's called a relationship test. And
okay.
Again, it's if someone lives with you for 6 months and a day, it could be a son, a daughter, a stepchild, a foster child, it could be a brother, a sister, it could be a grandchild, a niece, a parent. I mean, there's pretty much a long.
Does there have
long
to be like a bloodline connection or not?
Not necessarily. They have an other. Category,
mm-hmm.
And they're not real clear on what other is. You may have to kind of figure that out on your own. But something I'd like to point out in our software is that you have a lot of, you know, kids out there where mom and dad don't live together. They're divorced, mm-hmm. Separated. They have a divorce decree where one parent can claim the child for earned income credit this year, but the other parent gets the child tax credit. In our program, we have it's a very complex calculation, but again, it's just fill in the blanks. You check the boxes. If you can get the child tax credit this year, that's fine. If the other parent gets the earned income credit, you leave that one blank. But we actually calculate it out for you so that you don't have to guess whether or not you're actually claiming, you know, the proper deduction as per your agreement.
Okay. I think I understand that. So let's see. What else do I have? Child tax credits. And I know we talked about this, but remember, I don't know what I'm talking about. And earned income credits. To get an earned income credit, do you have to make a certain amount?
Well, we did discuss it briefly, but it's It's for lower income individuals. And as I said, you can start getting, it's earned income, which means, you know, in broad strokes, if you have a W-2 or a 1099 for work performed, not like interest from the bank or a dividend from a stock or a bond fund, that is actually earned income. And the IRS calculates that along with combat pay, if that, that comes into the equation. And they will give you a credit on your earned income based on how you file, in other words, your filing status, how many children you have, and your income. And the range is somewhere between $3,000 and $30,000, and it goes anywhere from, you know, $50 to $5,500.
Is it net or gross income that they base that on?
It's just called earned income.
I mean, the number that they allow you to do it or not. Say you make $50,000, but after all your deductions, it's $25,000. Do they base it on the 50 or the 25?
No, they base it on the 50. They'd be basing it on your earned income. You know, what actually amount that you actually earned and received a W-2 on. You can actually go up to a little over $43,000. 48,000 if you're married, and you have three or more children. That's kind of the high end of the range. And then the credit really goes up to over $5,600. So it's a pretty significant amount of money. And again, a lot of credits, including the child tax credit, is used to reduce your taxes due. So if you owed $400 and you had one child, you get $1,000 for that child as long as they lived with you for 6 months and a day and they're age 16 and younger.
Right? Okay.
So of that $1,000 that you owe $400, you're only going to get a $400 benefit on that child tax credit because it will reduce your taxes owed. Okay? The earned income credit actually is a refundable credit, which means that if you're essentially going to get every dollar that they give you either to reduce your taxes or in a refund.
Okay.
I realize this gets complex. There's also an additional child tax credit that is refundable that'll end up getting you the $600 that you didn't get on one side, they'll give it back to you in the other.
So can you talk to us about IRAs and Roth IRAs? What's the difference and which one's more advisable for an average person?
Well, there's a couple of really different schools. The first is just a regular IRA. And depending on your age, and you can go, I believe, up to $6,000 if you're over 50. Maybe $5,000, bear with me on that. But if you put in, say, $5,000 into an IRA, and if your tax bracket is, say, 20%, the government is subsidizing your IRA by $1,000 because that $5,000 is going to be used to reduce your income in that tax year.
This is a regular IRA, right?
Just a regular IRA.
Okay.
Now, when you take the money out, 5 years, 10 years, whatever, you're going to be taxed at your current tax rate at that time. And if you take the money out before, I believe, 59 and a half, they're going to charge you an additional 10% penalty in addition to that distribution.
Okay.
Now, a Roth IRA is really just quite the opposite. You can put in your deduction, just say it's $5,000 again, and I believe the contribution is you can put in $5,000 if you're 49 and younger, but if you're over 50, you get $6,000, and that's per taxpayer.
Okay.
Either the spouse or the primary. But a Roth is you don't get a tax deduction, all right? So that $5,000 you put in actually is taxed in your income. However, once you put it in a Roth IRA, you've already paid the taxes on it. So everything that grows to grows, you know, if you put in 5 and it turns into 50 in 10 years, then you can pull that 50,000 out without any taxes.
Really?
That's right. But see, because you're paying the taxes going in.
So you don't have to pay anything on the money that it makes?
That's correct.
Oh,
that's
wow.
That's why Roths are very popular. So like I said, there's two schools of thought. You have one where the government's subsidizing your investment in yourself by allowing you to reduce your taxable income. And the benefit to you is based on your tax bracket, whether it's 10% or 38% or whatever it might be. The Roth, on the other hand, if you can make good investments with it and it grows over time, whatever it grows to, because you paid the taxes before you made the investment in the Roth IRA, when you pull it out, there won't be any taxes. Now, I believe at some point, the IRS is going to force you to report that money, but it won't be added to your income. They want to know that you pulled it out.
Okay. What about 401ks? What's the advantage or disadvantage? Why would you want to do that or not an IRA? Just educate me on that.
Well, actually, you can do both. I mean, there's no restriction that you can't do an IRA and a 401k. There used to be, but I think they've reduced that. But a 401k allows you to take money out of your check before taxes and make investments. Typically, they're mutual funds, and they'll give you a range of list of mutual funds from cash to a government bond fund, maybe a foreign fund, and you kind of go more aggressive and speculative down the line, and you get to divvy up your money by whatever percentage that's allowed in the plan. But now a lot of companies, you know, I think a lot of companies recently, because of the economy, have cut this out, but a lot of companies actually do a match, too. In other words, say you put in 3% of your income, the company might match 3%.
Mm-hmm.
So for the benefit to, it's an employee benefit, to encourage you to save for your own retirement, the company may kick in another 3 or 4 or 2% to help, you know, help build up your own personal, pension. Now, what these replaced were back in the olden days, back when my dad was working, the good old days, they had pension plans and they had defined benefit plans. So you work in a place for 30 or 40 years, and the company's been putting back money for you, with an insurance company typically. And you look down the scale and say, all right, you get $3,200 to the end of time, to the end of your time anyway. And that's what 401ks are used to replace, because that's a very expensive product for companies to support. And so the 401k, it really is the employee taking over their own retirement.
Do you have to pay tax on what the employer puts in for you? Because my employer happens to do that. They happen to put some money in.
Again, because the money's going in prior to, you get a it reduces your income going in, and on the employer, they get to reduce they get to charge it as an expense. You know, as I said, I'm not up on the corporate tax right now, but back years ago, you used to be able to take that as an expense and reduce the income that the company had. So they actually had a taxable benefit for funding your plan as well.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. That's interesting to know.
But again, that's all your money. Now, you know, there's a vesting period. And depending on the plan, it might be 5 years or 10 years or whatever. But after you've worked at a place for, say, 10 years, all the money that they put in is yours.
Okay.
Okay? If you quit in 2 years, they're going to take a portion of that back out to help fund someone else's pension plan.
Okay. All right. So we have about 10 minutes left. What would you like to talk about? What that we've not talked about? What do you feel important that we cover?
Let's talk a little bit about online security. You know, I know people become more and more, you know, we started our company over about 5 years ago. This is our fifth tax season. And people are becoming more and more adept and understandable about it's okay to put a credit card in. It's okay. I understand you have to have this information to process the credit card. It was a little different than that, you know, 5 years ago. But on our CitizenTax.com site, you know, we have made a commitment to maximum security. And we provide every seal that, you know, I can think of that we need to provide to give people the comfort that we're doing everything we can to protect their personal information, because it's serious business to us. And you've got a lot of people out there, a lot of them overseas in Eastern Europe, Russia, and other places. They would love to get a hold of your Social Security number. But we do everything we can to protect that security. And I think it's very important for people to know that there are sites that you can trust, and there are other sites that I'd be uncomfortable putting my information on. Okay? Our personal program, we support about 95% of all Americans. If, you know, there's about 5% to 3 to 5% we don't support. But just on certain things that you do, if you've got taxable income, whether it's in a bank interest or a dividend from a stock or a bond, or you got capital gains, you know, here's one form that it's a relatively new form that we support, and unfortunately it's coming into play a lot. It's a debt forgiveness form. You know, it's called the Form 982. And it's for a lot of people that have been forced into bankruptcy, that they can file this, and essentially that forgiveness of that debt won't be taxable.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. I'm glad I don't have that problem, but I'm sure it's important for many people today.
Oh, millions of people, unfortunately. But it does. It's the 982s. It's a reporting document for the discharge of debt during 2009. And the dollar values aren't added into your tax return, but, you know, long story short, if someone, just say you had a credit card for $10,000, and the credit card company basically forgave that because you declared bankruptcy, they may send you what's called a 1099-C, which is C for cancellation.
Mm-hmm.
And in the old days, that $10,000, you'd have to add that to your income during that tax year.
Wow.
Okay, and if you didn't declare bankruptcy, you wouldn't have any money anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that $10,000 in income would hurt. But Form 982 allows you essentially to wipe off that debt.
One more question. We got a couple more minutes. What about, let's talk about child support for a minute. You know, I told you earlier I don't get child support from anybody. Is there anything that helps me out because that doesn't happen?
Well, you can actually report alimony.
Well, my personal person left the country and just left, so there's nothing. So is there any tax advantage for me for being a single parent with no support?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. I know a lot of people, you know, have parents that just leave. Unfortunately, yeah. You know, it's damaging financially and certainly to the children as well. But to my knowledge, there's nothing on the tax return that you can do for that. You kind of have to.
Anything else that we haven't talked about, any important thing, any new law, any other thing that's there that people can take advantage of that we've not talked about?
Let's talk a little bit about the education credits briefly.
Okay. We got about 5 minutes, and before that 5 minutes is up, I want you to take a minute again and tell people where to find you, okay? So just remember that.
I appreciate it. Now, again, it's education credits. Again, it's form 8863. And if you just go to our website, www.citizentax.com, we support it. Now, if you have a child or a dependent that goes to college, there's three different ways that you can, there's three different things that you can choose from to actually get a credit. Which again, a credit is better than an ex- than a deduction in most cases. The American Opportunity Credit is a new one with this last stimulus bill, and you can get up to basically $2,500 off your taxes to help supplement paying the college tuition. They have a HOPE credit. It's a little less than that, and they have a lifetime credit. So you can choose from one of the three. Most will be using the American Opportunity Credit because you get the most money.
Okay.
Basically, you get up to $2,500 a year for 4 years. And that's, as I said, that's a nice bonus. So this is an encouragement, obviously, for people to, you know, continue their education. A lot of people out of work, and they, you know, maybe looking at a way to build some new skills, and this kind of helps them get to school. And I want to let people know that that's available to them.
Is it just for the children? Or for,
no, I mean, I had two kids in college, so that's really why I went that way. But no, anyone that files a primary, a spouse, you can claim your dependents if you're a parent and you're putting your kids through college. You can claim that in return. But basically $2,500 a year per student for 4 years.
Okay, and you have to submit, you have to pay that much, or you just get the credit if they're going to school?
Well, you actually have to have paid qualified expenses, say a $4,000 or more per student to get the maximum. And and actually, a portion of that $2,500, I believe it's $1,000, is actually refundable, which means that it won't necessarily have to just reduce your tax bill. You could actually get, I believe it's up to $1,000, you can actually get a refund back added to your refund.
Now, what if someone's going to school and they get, like, Sallie Mae loans or whatever those loans are that they get? Does that count too, since they don't pay them right now? They pay on them, I guess. I don't know how that works exactly.
It does. If you're borrowing money to go to school, you're going to get a tuition statement, and that can be used on this 8863 education credit. But you're also going to be paying interest on that loan. And we have a little slot that you can enter your student loan interest as well.
Okay. All right. Tell us where to find you again. If people have questions, can they email you?
On our website, if you go to www.citizentax.com, that's singular, and just go to the homepage, and there's a contact us link on the toolbar. And all you have to do, really, is just click that link and enter your email and send us a customer service ticket, and we'll do our best to assist you and answer your questions.
Greg, you've been great. Thank you. You've really been great. It's out of my expertise, so I don't know if I asked the right questions, but you've been great. Thank you.
No, I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you for allowing me to talk about my company. I always get excited about it.
It's Citizen Singular, CITIZENTAX.org.
.com.
CitizenTax.com. Thank you, and I'll have you back next year if you'll come.
I'd love to come. Thank you again, Eva.
Good night.
I appreciate it.
My
Good
pleasure.
Night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Consciousness and health.
Consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.